You've had an amazing career, but a lot of this has come to light after you've retired.
Correct.
Talk about what you felt about going into retirement.
Yeah. Well, I think most of us recognize now that retirement isn't the age 65 with a gold watch and the send-off from a company you've been with for the last 30 years, which, you know, many of us remember probably our parents went through. And in fact, some people don't even realize they are retired. They've stopped work, but they're not too sure whether they're going to be continuing work. They may have stopped work for a wide variety of reasons, but they don't think of themselves as retired. So retirement these days isn't just a formal thing. It's actually a personal decision or personal realization. I think retirement really, to set a scene, is it's as big a change as entering the full-time workforce was when you were 20 years old. At the age of 20, you all of a sudden committed 5 of your 7 days a week, basically filling it up with work. Well, the change is just dramatic when you do actually retire, when you lose those 5 days a week of work but gain 5 free days, which on the surface looks very attractive. While you're in the workforce, though, actually looking at retirement, and this is something that I didn't really fully appreciate till I retired, retirement looks like a golden opportunity to chase those things you never had time for, hobbies, traveling, time with your family, socializing. And I remember I used to say when I was young, in middle age and full flight, and I say that overwork is a middle-aged disease. I think I don't know anybody in the workforce who's middle-aged who doesn't say they're overworked. I used to say I don't have enough time to do the things I want to do, let alone the things I have to do. And I used to sort of put forward that retirement should actually start at the beginning of working life. So you should be retired between the ages of 20 and 35 because you've got the energy then. And then work until you die. Well, of course, I've got a different view now. So many cases when you retire, you know what you're leaving and you know why you're leaving. And quite often you're actually running away from something, but you don't know what you're running towards. And that's the big question about retirement. And running towards means you can't really plan for it. Just think about when you were 20 and 25 going into the full-time workforce. You didn't actually have a clear view as to what your career was going to be. So how can you have a clear view of what your retirement's going to be? And I always like telling the little story that when my wife and I realized that retirement wasn't that far off, and maybe we should plan for it. And at that stage, we're in the hurly-burly of a job. Family was just beginning to leave home, and we couldn't think of anything better than isolation. So we went out and bought 540 acres of land in the southeast, down near Padthaway, with vineyards on one side, a cattle farm on the other, and a sheep farm on the other one, and a little shed in the middle of it. And we'd go down there on weekends and think that that was heaven. That turned out to be hell when we retired.
Of course, it's a lot of work, 540 acres.
Well, no, it was all bush. So there's no work to do with that.
Okay.
But what we realized that we really wanted when we retired was social contact, because that's what we lost when we left work. And you just don't understand that until it hits you in the face. It took us 10 years to sell that block. We lost our shirt on it. But guess who bought it? Another couple who are planning to retire. So I think that block's going to keep cycling through. So what looks attractive when you're working isn't that attractive when you're retired.
No. Yeah. Maybe your block of land has become a stepping stone for retirees in South Australia.
Yeah, and I'd like to know how many other stepping stones there are out there. I've had friends who have moved to Queensland, and 2 years later they've moved back. They realize you can't leave all your connections, you know, just not only your work connections, but in their case they're making social connections that they're leaving behind. So they come back. So that whole socialization thing, you don't realize that's what part of what you're going to miss.
So what happened then with your wife and yourself when you discovered that this wasn't really what your retirement dream constituted?
Yeah, well, I think when you stop working for money, I should say, keep in mind that there are two parts to that. Stop working for money. Okay, so that means you're going to stop earning money, but doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to stop working. And I think that's what some people don't realize, that when they're in the workforce, all they could really see was that paycheck at the end of it. And they had some sort of inkling that they're actually enjoying what they're doing, but there are too many things that got in the way to really appreciate that. When you actually take the compulsion out of it, in other words, the need to earn money, work starting to look a lot more attractive. And that, I guess, is the golden opportunity of retirement. Can you actually then say, am I ready now to work for the pure and simple value and enjoyment of work? Now, the process of retirement, by the way, the Stats Bureau will tell us that men are now retiring at the age of 62 and a half. Women are retiring at 60. And on that basis, I actually had 2011 fixed in my mind from about the age of 35 on, because that's when I was going to be 65. I ended up retiring in 2003, 8 years before that. It was just something I wasn't prepared for. I didn't realize it was going to happen. And I thought, just finished thinking, you can't plan for it anyway. 45-year-olds, by the way, are planning to work longer. But you can plan all you want at the age of 45. At the age of 60, all sorts of things can change, of course. You can be declared redundant. There may be skill changes that you're not willing to take on in your job. Your personal health might not allow you to continue at the level of activity that you do, especially if you're doing physical work. Your family health may dictate, you know, having to look after your parents and so forth. Job dissatisfaction, financial opportunity may come along, say you've now got the option. So, you know, it's not something you can actually plan for. So I think it's silly for the government to say, when do you plan to work until? And what I've been watching actually is a steady reduction in the retirement age. I've seen so many people leaving in their late 50s. So how do you approach retirement then when it comes upon you? One of the things is, am I actually retired? And talking to people about that, yeah, I'm retired, but I'm not prepared to work for retirement because people pay me for my knowledge. Why should I go back into volunteering and use my knowledge and not get paid for it? Well, that kind of attitude is not hurting anybody or stopping anybody except you. So it's something you've got to come to terms with. It's not a problem I had, but I've seen some people take 2 years to come around to understanding that, yeah, I enjoyed my job. I'd like to go back out and do it. And so what if there's a benefit somewhere out there socially? If they don't pay me, that doesn't really matter. So approaches to retirement. How do people approach retirement? Hobbies, right? I'm going to get really stuck into these hobbies I've only played at. But guess what? What you do part-time for fun can turn out to be pretty boring when you do it full-time. I used to collect stamps, and I couldn't imagine anything better than spending evenings, the odd stolen evening during my work career, collecting stamps. But when I had to collect stamps full-time, I utterly lost interest. Not surprising. Job jar. Well, all sorts of things I've got to do. Well, fine, even the biggest job jar probably won't keep you busy beyond 18 months. What are you going to do with the rest of the 18 years you've got ahead of you of energy? Family. That's probably a very big one, but an opportunity to spend time with family. And, of course, comes to mind grandparents with grandkids and so forth. And, yeah, that's pretty useful. And that can fill up 1 or 2 days a week. And, yeah, some people are very successful in making that transition. My case, I've got one son, and he lives in Canberra. So it's 4 times a year, so I don't have that option. Travel. When I realized I was retiring, I went to Dimmock's when it was on the mall and said, look, if you get any books on retirement, successful retirement, and I ended up speaking to the manager. And he says, oh, look, just go upstairs and in section 5, you'll find the travel section. And sort of that was it. So stuck in my mind was, hey, I got 20 years ahead of me. Maybe a 3-month trip to China, which I've always been dreaming of, is going to fill up that 20 years. Of course it doesn't. At best, it's going to fill up a month a year. Family, genealogy, casual volunteering, whatever. And of course, some people actually fudge the whole concept of retiring and do part-time work. Interestingly, though, returning work colleagues, when I was in the workforce who had retired, they would come in and, of course, they'd catch you probably around about coffee or lunchtime and you chat to them. And the inevitable question was, how are you enjoying your retirement? And always the response was, it's wonderful. You got all this free time. You can wake up in the morning anytime you want and you can do what you want. And that just sounded absolutely tremendous.
And yet they're in at the workplace again, looking for that social aspect.
Exactly, yep. And when I retired, I actually went through clinical depression. There were a couple of other factors that were working there because I took a very ambitious approach to pulling my house down and I wanted to build another sheltered house and so forth. And I just increased my stress levels. But what I was fundamentally missing was purpose, schedule, and contact with people. And interestingly now, when I talk to these same people who retired and have an honest chat with them over coffee, they all went through some kind of dip after retirement. It really, it's not just a physical or social thing, it's a psychological thing as well. And now that dip can be quite shallow for some people and quite deep, as it was in my case, for some people. I like to think I was clever enough to realize that really what I was missing in my life was contact with people. I run across a lot of men who still don't comprehend that what they're suffering from is that lack of social contact. Women are much better at managing it. So it was interesting looking at that. But what is retirement? A little anecdote. Retirement with a capital R. You can tell by my accent, I'm not from here. I'm originally Canadian, left my family behind in 40 years ago, back in the mid-70s. And my parents had retired. They're in their 80s. And I had what I call a cup of coffee with my mother. And that was every Sunday I'd phone her. And it cost about $2.50 for that phone call, about the cost of a cup of coffee in the early 2000s. And I remember one call from my mum and said, "What are you doing today, Mum?" She says, "Oh, we're doing the shopping." She said, "What else are you doing?" And there was a silence at the end of the phone. She says, "Well, we're doing the shopping." So, okay, that's fine. And keep in mind, they're in their 80s now. And then it hit me. Shopping takes all day for them. They wake up late, probably lie in bed, might read the newspaper, get up, make breakfast, sit down, have a cup of coffee, finish the newspaper, make up the shopping list, have a bit of a doze, then wake up, get lunch ready. Then between about 1:30 and 2:30, 3 o'clock, there's this flurry of activity where they go down and do the shopping, come home, put the cold stuff in the fridge, sit down, have a snooze, wake up, have a drink, put the rest of the groceries away, and have dinner. So that's capital R retirement. That's when one task takes up the whole day. Now, for some people, that can happen in their 40s or 50s. Some people, it happens in their 80s or 90s. So the next time I phoned my mum and said, "What are you doing today?" She says, "We're doing the laundry." I thought, "Oh, yes, you're doing the laundry." Now, that to me is capital R retirement. And when you're in the workforce, that's what you think small R retirement when you pull out of the paid workforce is about. But it isn't. You've got that great big gap in between. I think I'm retired, but one job isn't going to take all day. And what is that? That's phase three. Phase three, it's not youth, it's not middle age, and it's not old age. We have something in between now, which is I'm still basically young, energetic, skilled, socially engaged, want to get out there and achieve purpose in life. How do I do it? And that's, I think, where volunteering is very important.
So third age, as in?
Like University of the Third Age.
Yes,
it could be, yeah, exactly. But nobody's really defined that and written a book about how you successfully
transition.
Manage it. Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
I have heard a description of the first age, second age, third age. And first age, of course, is childhood, carefree, no real responsibilities. Mm. Second age is going to work, earning a living, getting a mortgage, having children.
Yep.
Third age is children grown up, left home, mortgage paid off. Mm. That's your third age. And that opens up a whole new world of possibilities. Mm. But what you're saying is many people can't cope with that because in that third age also comes retirement.
Mm.
So a lot of people aren't using it to the extent that they could be.
Yeah, that definition of third age does take in your final 10 years of working probably as well. I guess maybe I'm defining a subset of that third age is when you take the work out of the equation.
Mm.
There comes, I guess, a fairly big surprise, really, yeah.
So what have you found?
Well, look, I've come to the conclusion retirement is one of life's golden opportunities, and I don't think we really understand that. We think we're going to float into it and it's going to take care of itself, but like every opportunity, to make the best of it, you have to work at it. It's the only time in your life where, for most retirees, you got complete freedom of choice. You never had freedom of choice as a child. You certainly didn't in your middle age. And your old age, probably health is severely limiting your freedom of choice. You've probably made a decision that your pile of money, however small or big, is going to see you through. Your family obligations are reduced and even to the point of being eliminated, for instance, in my case, if you've only got one child in the state or no children. Your levels of self-confidence have never been higher. Your social skills have never been higher. Your professional skills are probably near their peak. They may have reduced a bit, let's say, if you're involved in technology and the technology's got beyond you. But your professional skills are usually very high. You're at the top of your game. You've got the best connections in the community. And most of all, you've got wisdom. this really hit me when I was retiring at, sorry, when I was volunteering at Red Cross. And I would turn up 2 days a week, shirt and tie, because that's what I was used to in a workforce, behind a computer, and I'd be the first or second one in the building because being retired, I wasn't going to pay for parking. I wanted to get free parking down on South Harrison and walk in. So I get in there around about 7:30, 7:45, and turn the lights on. And I realized that after, as other people came in, I was the oldest person in the building, the one with the most job experience. So I was professionally more experienced than anybody else in the building, including the local state manager. Now, I don't say that arrogantly, but it sort of says to you, hey, mate, there's still more to be given back than you have done through your work life. So it gives you the freedom to take risks. Retirement does. If the risks go wrong, you've got the maturity and skills and, you know, connections in community and so forth to handle it and give it another go. And it seems such a waste just to let this opportunity pass you by and not take an adventurous approach. You also have the impetus of narrowing time. I turned 70 this year, and I don't know anybody else who's out there that's 70 years old. I could handle 60, but 70 in my mind has put me in the death zone. It's terrible to say it that way. But you can actually count the years. And I always have it brought back to me, a Frank and Ernest cartoon from way back. You know, these two old geezers sitting on a bench, and one was turning to the other. He says, oh, yeah, once you're over the hill, you pick up speed. So, you know, not only are they limited years, but they're going to go flying by. So it'd be a shame not to find it. So finding that volunteering position, I think, is what the important thing is. Can I talk to that maybe a bit in terms of how you might go about that?
Absolutely. Yes, okay. I like the idea. It was only yesterday morning I woke up and thought, yeah, how many years have I got and what am I going to do to make sure I make the most of every single one of them?
I still hang on to a chap I work with at the weather. When I say work with, I volunteer with. I mean, we both work. We each run a project. He does his on Monday, Tuesday. I do mine on Thursday, Friday. He's 82. And he just doesn't stop. He's going on 45, and he's just taken on a third volunteering position. So I do my mathematics. I've still got at least 12 years left, hopefully. Yeah. Realizing you're retired, I think, is obviously the starting point. But something else that sets it into context is, I think of my father-in-law, who had his 97th birthday yesterday in Dublin, Ireland. But we would go over every year, sort of in his mid-70s, just in case they were going to die, and we had to see them, obviously, this year. But he never ceased until well into his mid to late 80s, saying, I don't really know what I want to be when I grow up. And I thought, what a great approach. And that's maybe the kind of approach we should be taking to volunteering. I don't really know what I want to do in volunteering. Let's go out and explore it. And you have that opportunity. But I think if you're seeking the opportunity, just as you would look for a full-time job, you take the same approach to looking for volunteering.
And not many people know how to do that.
It's a resume. It's preparing for an interview. It's having some inkling of what you're looking for, but also seeing if you can tickle it out of the organization. And there was a 23-year-old American who changed my life at Red Cross, because when I went in, I knew I wanted to sit behind a screen. I didn't want to be out in a car. And I said, look, I'd really like to do office work. Here's my resume. And she looked at it and she says, aha, you've done some benchmarking. Now, I won't explain what benchmarking is, but basically you can assess something. We need to assess how successfully we manage our volunteers. Off I went. And it was something I was familiar with, but I was applying it in a completely different environment. Average age, 32, and here I was, 58. 80% female, I'd always worked in organizations, 80% male. Humanitarian sector, I'd never worked in that. I worked in steel, and I'd worked in the automotive industry and the electronics industry. So the thrill was actually applying skills I had built up in a completely different environment, and it was like breathing pure oxygen.
How exciting.
You know why I left that organization, though, 7 years later?
Why?
They started treating me like an employee. It's really interesting. This is a conversation I've had with a lot of long-term volunteers, is that after a while they forget that you're a volunteer and they think of you as an employee. Red Cross, though, had a wonderful way of talking about volunteers. They're an employee like everybody else. They're just on a different pay rate. It's when they forget that you're on a different pay rate. You know what that pay rate is? It's a daily thank you. and you miss it when you don't get it. And that's what happens when they start treating you like part of the furniture. But that's another side of the coin. What do? You walk. It doesn't cost you anything. That's the joy of volunteering, and you move on.
And are there many alternatives out there for people who do want to walk, move on to something else?
That's going back to trying to find what there is out there. Yes, they are. Not many of them get advertised. And I had an occasion actually to go down to History SA's warehouse. Now, History SA really is tasked with running the three museums. We have the Maritime Museum, the Natural History Museum, and, of course, the Migration Museum. And down there, they've got all sorts of bits and pieces that don't find their way into the museum environment. There was a team of volunteers down there who were tasked to put together the next exhibition of the Migrants Museum. So basically, obviously it was overviewed by the professional historians, but the starting point was that the volunteers actually put together what they were going to show, how they were going to show it, and how they were going to express it. And I thought, what a volunteering job. And I spoke to each of them, and each of them got there through personal contact. So just as you'd use personal contacts to find a job, you're going to find personal contacts to find a volunteering position, and you're going to talk to other volunteers to find out. And Adelaide's full of those little opportunities. My wife at the moment is teaching English and mathematics in the jails. Now, she topped out as a senior teacher at a private girls' school teaching technology, and she burnt out. The age difference between her and her students was so broad that she was really experiencing stress. She loves her job because she's now talking to, could be a 45-year-old male who has no language skills whatsoever, can't do basic mathematics, and cannot read. So she's back to what she used to do when she was a young teacher, and that is making a difference. As a senior teacher, she had lost that focus. One of the successful things about finding a volunteering job that's going to suit you is to find something that takes you back to what really turned you on when you were 20. Red Cross put me onto IT projects because my background was IT. And that was a learning experience because you had all these young people thinking, we're going to get an IT solution and this is going to be the answer to all our prayers. I had been in IT long enough to know that there were several trains coming down the tunnel. And in these meetings, I used to scream about the trains coming down the tunnel. Then I realized I was killing the whole thing for them. And I pulled myself out. I wasn't enjoying it. They weren't enjoying having me there. But then when I had an opportunity to do some programming, which is something that I used to do when I was 20, I thoroughly enjoyed it. I watched an engineer who managed a factory with 1,500 people work at Red Cross on workflow issues. In other words, how do bits of paper and decisions get made in the organization? This is something he used to do as an engineer when he first started out. I watched somebody who was very senior in the TAFE sector in human resources. He was thoroughly enjoying writing job descriptions because that's what he started out doing. I can't quite put my finger on it, but going back to what motivated you when you were young can still motivate you when you're older, but your career has probably overlaid it with so many administrative, social and other issues that you have to deal with, employment issues and so forth, and job health and safety and all these sorts of things, that if you strip all that away, you go back to what the core was that you used to enjoy when you were 20. It's hard finding it, but it's out there for you, yeah.
Does it differ depending on what your experiences have been? Because many people don't have the academic background that you and your wife obviously have. So how do they go about obtaining that volunteering involvement that really gives them a thrill about getting up in the morning, enjoying life?
Ellen, I can only speak from my perspective, but look, I don't care if you're a bricklayer or a truck driver or a brain surgeon. There was something that made you excited about what you were doing when you were 20, and there are opportunities to return to that. Now, it could be, if you were in the physically skilled areas, you might find something in terms of actually starting a new program within a men's shed environment. It could be doing basic maintenance work for older people in their homes because they're not capable of doing it. There's a world of opportunity out there, and it's happening. You just have to find where it is.
You've done marvelous volunteering work, not only with Red Cross, but also with the Bureau of Meteorology. Mm-hmm. And now you're involved in a volunteer incubator system.
Yeah, now that gets a bit complex, but my experience has been that volunteering generally is set up as paid staff are running an operation that is done by volunteers. one of my barbecue stoppers is, can you imagine running a business that's only run, that only has volunteers as workers? You know, could you walk into a bank and the teller behind the counter and the loans officer off to the side, they're volunteers. They're doing it because they just love banking. Come on, you got to be joking, Mac. That can't happen. But what about walking into a grocery store? The person putting the vegetables out is there half a day a week because they just love handling vegetables, you know. And you don't see any of the office staff because they're in the back office sort of running the finances and the HR and all of that sort of stuff. Could you run a grocery store like that? No hope, Mac.
Well, it would be disastrous for the economy, for one thing, wouldn't it?
I wonder, because about the third largest sector of the economy is the humanitarian sector, which basically runs its business on the back of volunteer labor. Now, the labor issue there is it's a bad term, but what happens in volunteering, so many volunteering positions, is you are asked to give your time but not your commitment. And this is a recurring theme I keep hearing from the volunteers that I deal with, and I can't say this is universal, but what I'm looking for is something that I can carry. Blimey, I'm 60 years old. I've got 40 years experience. Don't tell me what I've got to do because I know how to do it. So I've had the luxury with the Weather Bureau of starting and running a volunteer-only enterprise. The Weather Bureau allows us to do what we want to do as long as they can see some sort of return. But they don't supervise us. They just trust us to be delivering. And we choose at whim, but obviously a very informed whim, in what direction we're going to go. And I run across a lot of retired people who would like to have the opportunity basically to be volunteer entrepreneurs. They want to be able to take their skills out there and actually start and run something. The entrepreneurship community in Adelaide and all of the support goes with it, and there's a lot of support, is predicated that the entrepreneur is going to start a business that will start generating revenue. And that's not what volunteering is about in its pure sense. Volunteering is about doing things for free. It's what I call the free economy. So we're looking to try and set up an environment where we copy what they do in the entrepreneurship space for startup businesses to do it for startup volunteering enterprises. And there's so many things that we could be harnessing, especially baby boomers, with a huge skill set. We don't put them in a car to drive people to hospital. Some are very happy to do that, but some want more than that. So what I want is, don't give me a job and just take my time. Give me a job and give me responsibility. And if you really start adding it up, what could be done in this town if we could just apply our intelligence, our capacity, our freedom to take risks, the connections that we have in town, the people we know, and all of these things? What could you be doing in this town? And the concept of a volunteer incubator doesn't exist anywhere else in the world that we can find. So this actually has the support at this stage of volunteering SA and some support from the state government. But I won't go into the particularities of it, but it's a long haul setting it up, because trying to get something done at no cost means that somebody else has to pay cost. You need heat, light, power, insurance, and these sorts of things.
That sounds a fabulous idea. And how has that been taken up by retirees?
Look, Helen, it's early days. And interestingly, I think what happens when people retire, they don't realize that there's still the opportunity to take initiative. I speak to my fellow retired men. They say, you know what this town really needs is we need an inventory of what skills there are out there in the retired community. In other words, how many retired lawyers do we have who are willing to help organizations and so forth? Nobody's doing this. I said, no, well, who should be doing it? Well, I don't know, there should be somebody. Well, why don't you do it? Me? Yeah, look, you're not doing anything 7 days a week. You've got all the contacts. You used to be a consultant. Oh, I don't know if I can do that. Well, what we have to do is to give them an environment where they feel comfortable to start taking the risks and building the opportunities and getting the feedback on actually starting a successful enterprise that's feeding back into the community. And that's what we would be doing partially with a volunteer incubator. So come on in. Look, Harry's started up a project. Why don't you speak to him? Oh, you need some money? Well, look, there are all sorts of grants. Grants? Oh, I didn't realize people were giving grants to one. Yeah, well, look, speak to John over there. He's got grants. He's done grants. He knows how to make a grant application. He's very successful at it. So that's the concept behind what we're trying to do. But we need that bit of real estate where we can put people together. And that's what we're focused on doing.
Sounds great. Yeah. Has anyone done any survey on the improvement of the social aspects of retirees volunteering?
Yeah, Helen, look, I've read them. I don't have them stashed away, but you get on the internet. You can find all sorts of those sorts of surveys. That survey that I said that I started out with at Red Cross, it was instructive. It took us 2 years, and we surveyed all our volunteers, and we actually surveyed them against what you call best practice, which came out of Volunteering Australia in Sydney. And, you know, we could actually sort of put a scorecard against Red Cross. But fundamentally, what we came down to is, why do people volunteer? Well, you know, they got all sorts of reasons, but the main thing is that they want to focus in their life. They want something around which their life revolves, even if it's just 2 hours a week. But they've got an altruistic reason for volunteering, because they want to go out and nurture people. They want to socialize. They need the self-affirmation that a team will bring to them. They need schedule and routine. They need their own self-respect. There's a whole variety of reasons as to why they might want to do that. But when we listed all of these things and we looked at it, what these people deserve as workers is what any worker deserves, paid or unpaid. In other words, what's going to make a volunteer work harder is exactly what's going to make a paid person work harder. There's nothing mysterious about it. We all want to help people. We all want to work in teams, typically. We all want self-respect. We all want some schedule in our life. Fine, so go out and find another, excuse the term, job. In my view, it's go out and find another career.
Mac, it's been absolutely fascinating talking with you about this. What you've actually said to me is, many people have plans for retirement or have expectations of retirement, but they need to be flexible enough to change those outlooks.
Yes, and also adventurous is what I'm really pushing for. You've got limited time, and if it's in your bucket list, go for it.
I love that.
Yeah. Thank you, Helen.
Thank you very much, Mac.
Thanks.